I think we ought to mention also...
Blog Talk Radio.
Oh. Okay, I guess...
Okay, hello everybody. Hi, welcome to the Travel Advice Show. Hi, I'm Chris Newton and my co-host Jerry Fuller. How you doing, Jerry?
Hi. Very fine. How are
Hi.
You, Chris?
Oh, really good, really good. It's May 13th, 2007, and we're really excited. We have a great guest today. Dr. Linda Rahlstein is visiting us again, and she's a professor at the University of Utah in the Parks, Recreation, and Tourism Department, and she also is an expert in sustainable tourism, and that's our topic today. We're going to talk about how to be responsible as a traveler when you're traveling around the world in different regions and how to sustain the environment. And welcome, Linda. Welcome.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate that. It's my pleasure to be here. I look forward to chatting with you and Jerry about one of my favorite topics.
Oh, very good.
That's great.
Well, Linda, how do you define it? How do you define sustainable tourism?
I think we define sustainable tourism, and there's not a universal definition, but if we can just come to an idea that it's a mindset, it's an attitude of caring, respecting, and benefiting the local people and the environment at the same time. You know, a lot of people are already engaged in responsible travel for a large part, you know, because they try to avoid the crowds, the typical mass tourism type experience, and they're probably already a responsible tourist in that regard. So it's a good thing. I like one of Clay Hubb, too. He wrote a statement about responsible tourism. He said, the golden rule is more and more recognized as the first rule of travel, and I think that's key. If we keep in mind, how would we like to be treated when we travel? I think we become more responsible in our activities of what we do when we leave home.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask this question. Oh, yeah, I love that definition. I think he's right on, and I think your definition is very, very good for our topic. As you mentioned, it's very complex, but it's you sort of summarized it very, very well. I want to mention one thing that as we talk, have you noted, Linda, because I know as I've traveled all over the world, that when I've gone to places like 30 years ago or 40 years ago and go back in the various stages up to now, that they're becoming more and more changed. Have you noted that in your travel?
Yes, I have. And it's rather sad because sometimes the changes have not always been positive ones. Mm-hmm. You know, it becomes much more commercial. It loses its unique identity. You know, we travel halfway around the world, and the last thing we want to do is find the same old when we arrive somewhere else. You know, mm-hmm. we haven't traveled 3,000 miles just to walk in and dine at, you know, the typical fast food places we have at home or to buy the same things we have right here. The idea is to experience something new and different. And so we want to try to make sure that when we're satisfying our travel needs that we don't always have unrealistic expectations and only stay. You know, I think it's sad when people only stay in the big franchise hotels, the global hotels. Nothing against them, but I think if you really want to get a taste of some local people, you know, staying in the local hotels or a small bed and breakfast, even in a youth hostel is a way to really get to know some of the local people.
Mm-hmm.
Have you found that to be true?
I have. One thing that I've also noted, or even staying in little inns or out-of-the-way areas and not staying downtown, but maybe staying in a smaller town in the outskirts or even 10, 20 miles from where you might want to be and commute by train or rental car or something. One thing that let me give you a funny experience. I don't know if you've ever heard of a place called Nouakchott. It's a town in Mauritania and on the western part of Africa. And about 35 years ago, I landed there, and it's all desert. I mean, it is Sahara Desert, right by the ocean, and the end of the Sahara Desert before you get to the Atlantic. And I go into the ultra-modern, very small, though, airport, and they're playing Mantovani's Summertime in Venice, the exact recording that I have. And I was stunned. I mean, we're talking 35 years ago when no one ever heard of it, even Mauritania. And
right.
Even then, they were starting to change. And I was hoping to hear some African music or even have some local people there playing or something, but it is changing. And I think you're right. When we travel, we need to help them, even though I know I don't want to go without toilet paper or hot running water or air conditioning and heating in the winter. But I hope we can maintain at least the cultural part of it, don't you?
I agree. I think many times we have to identify those for ourselves, and it's some of our own behaviors. You know, it's carrying out the batteries. You know, we tend to have all kinds of electronic toys that we carry with us when we travel. And
right.
Instead of leaving them behind, we should take them home, you know, because
yeah.
many of these places, if you're traveling to a pristine environment like the Amazon or to the Sahara Desert, we don't need to be dumping our batteries and leaving them behind. And we need to be considerate. Last year when I was traveling in Ireland, I found it rather interesting that almost every corner that I seemed to have in every tiny little village, you could always find a recycling center to recycle newspapers, plastic, glass, aluminum. And, you know, it's an important thing to do. And so that was always something, no matter where we travel, we always, you know, try to recycle. Even if we're just staying in a hotel, we'll recycle at the hotel and insist that they recycle. And I think we can, as tourists, start telling people that we expect them to participate in this and save the environment as the best we can. You know, and, you know, little things like if you are staying in a hotel, don't leave the TV running when you're not watching it, or don't leave the lights on when you leave the room. You know, just little things like that.
Mm-hmm. I know a lot of the hotels in larger cities, even when you open up the door to the balcony or the patio, it cuts the air conditioning off.
Right.
I've noted that. And they're really starting to become more eco-environment conscious in every aspect.
I noticed in China, and Chris, you may remember this, many of the places that we stayed, you had to put your door key card into a slot inside the door to turn the electricity on. It
oh, I remember that. Yeah, that was great. Yeah, great idea for that. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, because like I never really seen that before, you know, used like that. I think that's a great idea. If you don't have your key, yeah, it's hard to... Hard to get your lights on, you know.
I know.
Right.
Well, when we were in East, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say, so there's little things like that that protect the environment. But I think your key point about the local culture is equally important. We need to respect the local people. And many times it's how we interact with them. Maybe if it's just buying a handmade craft or something that they've made, to be fair in the exchange. I know when I was in Peru, we went to this little village called the Willick Village, and it was about, it's very high in altitude. It was like over 10,000 foot elevation. And we brought with us a soccer ball and patch kit for the little kids at the school. And then afterwards, we were trading with the women who were doing weaving, natural weaving. And I noticed some of the people, I was in a small group of educators. There was only 8 of us in our group. But some of the people were really bargaining with these people. And I thought it was insulting that they were only offering, you know, maybe $1 for a vest or a poncho. And I was like, you're crazy. That's a wonderful piece of artsmanship, and we should be respectful of those people and give them a fair price for what it is. Sure, maybe you don't want to pay the same thing you would pay if you came back here in America, but, you know, let's be fair. I know when I was in China, I got a wonderful piece of jade that had been carved, and, you know, I've had so many people tell me afterwards, you know, what a wonderful piece it is, but, you know, I know... That particular piece was a gift to me, but I know that when I buy things in China, I always try to make sure I pay a fair price for it and not trying to rip off the local people just because it's their custom to barter and to go back and forth on the prices. Did you have that experience when you were in China, Chris?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, like I'm not too good with bargaining too much. Like I just don't want to even like have the hassle. So for me, I was like giving them almost maybe more than what the item was actually in China, you know. But when I was traveling or anywhere in the world, for me, I think the way I look at it, I try to find the business or that person who's really kind of a local, and you're actually dealing with the owner, you know, and not the kind of the franchise kind of places per se. But I always try to, you know, give them a good bargain. Remember, Linda, when we were in Beijing at the Great Wall there, this one person was selling me, trying to sell postcards to me
right.
at the Great Wall, and Linda's like, you can get a better deal than that. Like I think I got it like for $2 or something for a postcard, you know. But that was funny, you know.
You have
yeah.
to learn a little bit, but I mean, you know,
yeah.
seeking out
yeah.
the authentic. I mean, it's one
yes.
thing if it's postcards. It's another thing if you're buying, you know, something that someone has carved or painted.
Right.
You know, making sure that you give them a fair dollar, because that represents their culture, and also it helps them to build value in their own unique identity. You know, instead of treating it with disrespect, you know, make sure you understand and recognize that it may have things. I know when I was in Africa in Kenya, we stayed at this lodge that was managed by a Maasai tribe, and we went to Vibamba to actually visit their village, their homes, and they were selling some of their crafts that were there. And we were told ahead of time there was this beautiful staff that was had all been covered. It was wooden, and it was covered in beads. It was so wonderful. I asked about it, you know, because I thought, well, this would be great to have. And the guide, who happened to be a Maasai warrior himself, said, well, we never sell those to women because that's exclusive for men. You know,
oh,
that was kind of it kind of stung a little bit as a woman. I was like,
right.
I can't buy that. You know, so I just got another man to buy it for me. But
you know, I know, they're amazing.
You know, but respecting their culture, even though
yeah,
maybe
local
to
culture.
Me, in my American culture, I kind of, you know, think women have equal rights, recognizing that sometimes around another country that may not be exactly the same
mm-hmm.
standard of behavior. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. One of the things that I've noted in many countries of the world, the Central Asian countries and many of the more non-touristy African countries, a lot of the children will come up and they will give you things and sell you things, but what they want are paper and pencils and
yes.
crayons and things they can use in school, which I find exciting and kind of different because I'm used to trading with money type of thing, but I'm not used to pencils. And I think when people go to countries, you know, research the countries and see which ones of the children like that because it's good for them, for their schools and their education.
Exactly.
They just can't get this paper.
You know, it's little things to be aware of, like not giving children in a developing country where oral hygiene may not be at the same standard as ours, not giving them sugar candy. You know, they don't, you know, when I went to the Amazon, I took a suitcase filled with toothbrushes and toothpaste because the clinic that I was going to be visiting down there, they said, you know, we don't have a dentist. And so most of the people, by the time they're 25, have lost all their teeth. And I was like, how tragic. And so, you know, we went down there and you know, took and gave the children toothbrushes and toothpaste. And the kids thought they were getting gold. They were just so thrilled to have that. And instead of exchanging money for things, the crafts that were made in the Amazon, we exchanged fishing hooks because it's such a – anything metal rust out very quickly in the, you know, the humidity. So that was very popular. And I think the most valuable thing that I gave or exchanged was I had taken a rubber mallet down because they said they needed hammers at this village that we were visiting. I thought, well, gee, a hammer's just going to rust out. So I took this rubber mallet, and they were so thrilled, you know. Little things that we take for granted, they thought was amazing.
Mm-hmm. One thing I've noted, Karen, in the same kind of vein, like many of the larger cities, like London and Amsterdam and the larger cities of the world, many tourists don't want to do it, for example, is rent a bicycle and ride through them.
Oh, and yet that's the best way.
I know, and save the gas and the pollution and things on that nature. And so there's so many ways we can travel without polluting the area any worse than it is. And, I mean, go ahead. Have you noticed that?
You know, I would agree with you 100%, you know, that people need to use the local transportation and, you know, not necessarily drive all the places, especially in some of the urban areas. It's much easier to get around on mass transit or on a bicycle. Amsterdam was great. I mean, I loved going around on the canal boats. You know, it was just great, you know, to be out there and enjoying the peace and quiet. And we went out on a boat that was, you know, being paddled, and it was just, I don't know if that oars, I guess. I don't know how you would say it, but it was just, you know, an amazing experience because it was so quiet and serene to enjoy that experience rather than constantly thinking that we have to be in our cars.
Mm-hmm. Well, one way of travel, especially in Europe, that is becoming extremely popular is walking trips. You can go for days and days and weeks walking. And, of course, that doesn't do any harm to the environment as long as you don't paint on something or pull up the plants. But it is a great way to help the society and the culture to maintain the beauty and the way of life. Because, I mean, in France, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I've also seen a lot of bicycling tours that you can take where you fly into an area and they even have the bike for you and everything. And
right.
So have to transport that. And then you can go on when I was up in Banff a couple of years ago, they had bicycling tours of the Banff National Park. And I thought, what an incredible way to see this beautiful landscape. You know, it's just, you know, awe-inspiring.
I know, because I've started doing more of that. I'm taking the walking and bicycling tours. And also, I mean, people don't think about it, but a great way to see England is the canals. You can rent your own boat, and you can self-navigate just through the canals, and they've got hundreds of miles of canals. And you can either get somebody to do it for you, or you can do your own. And it's a great way to do it and just not pollute or keep the environment and have it quiet. Because when you mentioned the word as they're paddling along, it's so quiet. That's one thing that in our travel nowadays that we just don't enjoy as much because there's not a lot of quiet anymore in travel, is there?
Right.
No silence.
You know, and yet if you really want to enjoy the experience, you know, being able to be as close to it as possible. I mean, I was just stunned when I went to Africa, and at first I was a little overwhelmed by the experience of hiking through the savanna, but let me tell you that it's an incredible experience. The things that you see when you're on the ground and what you hear, and you're like going, you know, is that a elephant? You know, but I mean, it's one thing to you know, see them from afar, but to feel them on the ground as you're walking and just an amazing experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wouldn't trade it for anything. And you'd never get that experience being in a Land Rover. Now, I know some places were not safe that we couldn't hike in. You know, we were in Tsavo National Park, and they were like going, we don't allow people to walk here because the lions are, you know, they're very well known there for attacking tourists. So, you know.
Yeah, if you get out of get out of vehicle, you might be meat.
Right. You know, we don't want to be eaten either. But.
Right.
So there are times when it's not appropriate. But when you do have that chance, you know, to go out and enjoy the experience. I mean, I remember an awesome experience, and it wasn't part of a tour or anything. It was we were at a Amazon Educators Workshop in the Peruvian Amazon. And, you know, when you're on the Amazon floor, the jungle, you can't see sunrise or sunset because the canopy over you is huge. And so I took and talked to one of our guides, and I said, you know, I'd really always make it a habit to see sundown. And I can't see sundown here. And he said, well, let me take you out on the river in a boat. And so we just took, you know, a canoe. Well, it's a long, you know, Amazonian-type canoe. Holds like 8 people, but it's a paddled canoe, and went out and floated down the Napo River and watched the sun go down, and then we were able to watch the stars come out. And I was like, that memory is so well worth it to me. I remember that like it was yesterday. You know, you could hear the sounds of the forest coming alive in the dark, and you could hear the wind on the river, and just an incredible experience, you know.
Oh, I know. Now, I made a list of a couple of ways that people might want to travel to help in this topic.
Great.
Many of us only think maybe a cruise is the main way to go, like a real big ship, or by a bus, because they travel Europe by bus. But I wrote down several ideas, because there are some natural type of ways, like whitewater rafting, mountain climbing, and overlanding, and dude ranches, and we already talked about cycling and trekking and talked about river cruises, but they're all over the world, these river cruises. My across-the-street neighbor just literally got back Tuesday night from a 11-day cruise down the Rhine, and they're jungle stays where you actually stay. When you were going down the Amazon, Linda, did you stay in the jungle lodges?
We did. Some of them were rather primitive, but yes, yeah. We did. I mean, we often had just kerosene lanterns for light,
uh-huh.
And you showered with river water. And
right.
But it was part of the experience, not for everyone,
right.
You know.
Right. And also I wrote down things that we may never think about, like anthropology tours or conservation tours or archaeological tours or bird watching or historical or even scuba.
Or volunteerism. Which is a growing area now, is going and doing volunteer work in different areas.
Right.
You can almost find a volunteer-type trip that's great even for the family to go on.
I know it.
This doesn't have to be, I mean, I think the first one I went on, it was like seen as kind of the young adult-type thing. I'm not going to get into when I did it, so I won't tell my age. But I know that it was, you know, seen kind of like that was a thing that, you know, college kids did. But now when I go on them, I find that it takes in all the ages, senior adults, families. And, in fact, there are some volunteer tours that are just for families, which is just an incredible opportunity for kids to get an experience with their mom and dad along at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a website, and I should have written down the exact title of it, but it's Specialty Travel Index. And I think it's specialtytravelindex.com. And they mention hundreds of different types of eco-type of travel, all kinds of the type we've all mentioned, all the way from family stays to traveling conscious of the environment, and wide variety of options. And I want our listeners to be sure to know about Specialty Travel Index, because it gives you so many different ideas of to be more ecologically friendly in the areas. Because, you know, they mention types of tours that you had never mentioned in the world, and almost any topic is there, literally, and ways to travel. And they talk about the companies that actually do these. They will arrange it for you so that it will be easier for you to actually do it. So
another great site is called www.ethicaltraveler.org. It's a great one. It has some great guidelines about some things that you should do, you know, such as I mentioned, you know, bargain fairly, learn and respect traditions and taboos. You know, great. It's a great website. It also talks to you about how you can select an ethical company, you know, and I think that's a key thing. We often see, 20 years ago, ecotourism was a new word, and we still to this day don't have a common definition or someone, but a lot of people have co-opted, taken over that name of ecotourism. They'll say, I'm an ecotourism provider, and not all of them are. You know, they are just using that term to get you to let go of your valuable dollars and come to them, you know. And so you have to be very savvy to check out to make sure that you're not you know, ending up giving your money to someone who is really not talking about sustainability. They're just using it to get you there, and then you'll find out that, you know, they have marble sinks and air conditioning. I mean, you know,
right, yeah.
And I know I like air conditioning along with the best people, but there are some places it just
right.
doesn't belong.
That's absolutely true. I know.
You know,
that's a
so
very good point.
You know, if people can educate themselves, I guess responsible travel starts at home, and before you ever leave, you need to be, you know, ethical and responsible in your planning. And don't be afraid to ask people. You know, if you're going to go ahead and select someone before you book your reservation, find out what do they do. You know, do they contribute part of their room fees to a conservation organization? Do they hire only people who are local residents, or do they have a certain percentage? You know, certain countries like Costa Rica, Belize, Peru are really been very forward about making sure that companies follow strict guidelines, but not everyone does. And so we, the tourists, can vote with our dollars mm-hmm. about who we're going to support. And then if more and more people supported people who were honestly and very ethical in their sustainable or responsible tourism, then I think people would really begin to catch on. They would begin to realize just how vital this is. We can't destroy that wonderful place we go to. I mean, we want it to be just as nice in 20 years when we go back as it was the first time we were there. Right, Jerry?
I agree. And so many of the places are not. But a lot of places are starting to change to go back. Well, even in the U.S., they're making, in like our national parks, they're making major changes on how you can travel them. And it's when you can go, and if you can, for example, do snowmobiling and all that in them, and when. So, I mean, I think more and more people are becoming aware that this is a valuable thing for the society and the culture and the world itself, so it won't be destroyed and changed irreparably.
Right.
So it's a good deal, and people should be very much aware of it and take an active part in it. I firmly believe that.
Yes, especially if you go, like, in the environment, like, do a lot of, if you're in the nature and outdoors area, you know, to sustain mm-hmm. that environment. Yeah, that's really important. Yeah.
It's just little things like that, you know. I think another thing that people can do that are just so respectful is to learn a few words in the local language.
Right.
You know, if you're going somewhere, learn how to say thank you and how to say goodbye. You know, what
is it? It goes a long ways, yeah.
It does. You know, it's just amazing. You know, I can speak a few words in Chinese without
ni hao.
Ni hao to say greeting or to, you know, say xie is to say thank you. And whether you're shopping and whatever it might be, you know, a few words is just so well-respected, you know, it makes you feel welcome. I think in Swahili, the word karibu means welcome. And, you know, that's always been my philosophy, is I want to make people feel like I respect them, and so they will respect me and therefore welcome me to their home. And that's the you know, if we all treated it like, you know, how are we going to have people welcome to our home? We want to treat them the same way when we go to their home.
Excellent. Well, I think our time is getting pretty close to the end. Has
it
gone
is.
So fast.
We fly through these things.
You just fly. I know. It's unreal. Well, again, Linda, thanks so very, very much for being on and talking about a topic that is absolutely critical for the future of travel and society and the world. And we appreciate it very, very much.
My pleasure.
Glad to have you back.
Great.
And,
thank
I
you, Linda.
I wish
Pardon?
Everyone a happy Mother's Day.
Oh,
thank
yeah,
you.
For all the mothers out there. Yeah, all the mothers out
well,
there.
Thank you.
May 13th, yeah.
Well, Chris, what are we going to talk about next week?
Okay, Jerry, yeah, next week we're talking about packing for the summer. You know, just some great advice, you know, just about how to plan your summer vacation, you know, just on what type of things to bring, what you need to kind of go to different variety of places, mountains, beaches. Was there anything else? Just kind of packing for the summer.
Yeah, just ideas on things and the unique ways of packing. So we'll look forward to having everybody tune in for that.
That sounds good, yeah. And don't forget to check out the website, www.traveladviceshow.com. And thank you again, Linda, for being on the show.
My pleasure. Have a great evening.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And until next week, then, May 21st is the next show. So.
Fantastic. All right, we'll see you next week, then.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
Bye.